Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents When I See You Again, a novel by Daryl Banner, narrated by Chris Chambers. Foreword and Disclaimer. Imagine a lifetime. Go through that lifetime and take one small sampling every 5 years. Throw away everything else. That's what When I See You Again is. A handful of scenes from these two men's lives that each take place 5 years apart. There will be questions left unanswered between the chapters, characters that change dramatically or vanish, and major moments in their lives that are omitted entirely. As it turns out, a lot can happen in 5 years. And, like life, these two men lose touch with friends, with themselves, and with each other along the way. Love can be a broken, imperfect path, but its cost is always worth it in the end. If triggers are no issue for you, you can feel free to start the prologue. Enjoy! Otherwise, here is a warning of what you may encounter in this book. Content Advisory. When I See You Again contains some potentially triggering subject matter, such as domestic abuse. Note, abuse is implied, not described, and doesn't involve the main characters directly. Alcoholism, nonviolent bullying, and infidelity. Note, the actual act of infidelity isn't directed toward the main characters, but does involve them. If any of these subjects disturb you, please practice self-discretion before reading. Prologue. There is, in fact, a fate worse than death. It's being in love with someone who doesn't love you back. It's a particularly cruel kind of devastation, rivaled only by one other thing: discovering you've run out of beer. That's Bo Whitman in the incredibly shit-tastic year of 2005, standing in front of an old, buzzing fridge in apartment 331, a room in Texas's finest shit-tastic apartment complex at the edge of town, next door to a pothead and one tiny floor up from a taped-off crime scene in 231. Bo, in just a pair of black bikini briefs at his rope's end, hadn't eaten in 2.5 days, eyes sunken in from lack of sleep, a prairie of stubble overrunning his pallid cheeks, and no beer in the fridge. Like unrequited love, the sight of the fridge only returned an unpromising, likely expired pack of lunch meat and a single slice of Kraft cheese. What was Bo supposed to do with that? He and Caleb had ended things. Again, this time it was surely for good. Now Bo was in the rundown apartment that once belonged to his father, drunk and out of beer. And what other evidence did he really need to prove he'd become him? It was in times like these he wondered if his mom had it right all along, to have run away so long ago. He nearly envied her. A moment later, he was perched on the balcony railing with his bare legs dangled over the edge. He didn't care how cold it was, nor that he was flashing the parking lot with his bikini-clad junk, and one mere push away from falling 3 stories below. He hadn't showered in days. Caleb's scent still lingered like a ghost on his skin, and if he washed it away, it'd be the last thing he knew of Caleb Fletcher, the man who gave and took everything from him. Have you ever felt so in love? Your heart wanted to leave your chest and join whoever it is you couldn't live without. And after that moment, your heart never truly belonged to you anymore. Well, that sounded like a living nightmare to Bo. He liked his heart right where it was, locked up in his chest. But every time he thought of Caleb, he felt trapped, sucked into a hole of despair that began and ended with every last word they shouted at each other. Why did things have to get so ugly? Why do angry words always have to come between the love they so clearly had for one another? All Beau wanted was for his phone to make that little ding, and for him to pick it up and see Caleb's words, and to feel relief. Then he'd know if it was over for good, or if there was one last drop for him at the bottom. One last drop. Was everything a drinking metaphor now? I've become my old man, he lamented, an especially cruel sequence of words he swore he'd never say. He lifted his hand to his eyes. A modest platinum band on his finger stared back at him like the punchline to a joke he dared never utter. The joke was something about him believing he'd ever deserve a love as real as Caleb's. Everyone in the audience would laugh except for Beau, who just lifted his can of second-rate beer in a toast before kicking it back. Except he had no beer, because he was out. Why didn't he give Caleb this damned ring when he had the chance? He tugged at the ring on his finger. It slipped off too easily. Was that yet another metaphor? I do, said Beau to the ring through his watery eyes. They weren't watering from crying, of course. Beau never cried. He kept all of his feelings stuffed down inside like you're supposed to, festering, ignored, and full of potential like a goddamned volcano ready to blow. In sickness, in health, all of it. I do, Caleb Fletcher. I fucking do. Now pick up the phone already and let's make this right again. Okay? His heart was broken. Wasn't that enough to pay back for all the years they'd weathered each other's storm? A drop of rain kissed his nose right then. Beau looked up. Perfect. Just like the day they met, nearly 20 years ago. First came the rain. Then the lightning. Then Caleb at the end of the driveway, where Beau's bike was about to crash into the poor boy. Maybe they were doomed from the start. The first thing Beau ever did to Caleb was hurt him. Maybe it'll be the last, too. The next thunderbolt came like a bomb, blinding and loud. Beau flinched, and the ring slipped from his fingers. He nearly went with it before clinging to the railing to stop himself. His wide eyes watched as the ring nosedived to the parking lot below, like just another raindrop speeding by. If he didn't get that ring back, he was sure it'd be found by any of the sketchy people who stayed at that place. Then all his love for Caleb, represented by that ring, would be reduced to nothing but cheap pawn shop fodder for someone's next dime bag. Beau hopped right off the balcony railing like he wasn't just an inch from falling to his death, stepped over an empty pizza box, nearly banged his foot into the leg of the coffee table, then tore out of the apartment. And in the bushes far below his balcony, Beau dug through branches and leaves and dirt, a sheen of sweat clinging to his forehead as the rain began to fall all around him, thunder booming at his back, fingertips sore, desperate to get the ring back. He was desperate to get Caleb back. He was desperate to get his life back, his love back, his everything. If only he could go back to before his life fell the fuck apart. Maybe he would make different choices. Maybe he could do better. But his timing sucked. Time. That was always the problem, wasn't it? Running out of it. Having too much of it. Waiting for it. Cursing it. Enduring it. Surviving it. Time was the fucking enemy. All he needed was more time. That was the exact thought he had 10 years later, in 2015, as he raced around the bright, fresh, sun-filled house filled with friends and family, and a dozen other faces he didn't know, likely everyone's plus ones and twos.
"All I need is a little time. 5 more stinking minutes for crying out loud,"
Beau shouted as he scrambled to the buffet table set up in the kitchen, where he was astonished to discover half of the staff missing. He gave a hurried order to someone, then checked on the front room, where his friends were laughing and chatting, unconcerned with anything.
"Seriously?" he cried at them. "He'll be here any minute. Come on, get into your places."
No one was taking anything seriously. The guest of honor was about to arrive. Everything needed to be perfect. He just needed 5 more minutes. As Beau carried a basket of, "What's in this thing anyway?" something to another table, the doorbell rang. A hush fell over the house.
"Why would he ring the..."
muttered Beau as he hurried to the door. Anticipation filled everyone's faces. Beau ran a hand down his shirt to smooth it out, then took a breath. He pulled open the door.
"Surprise!"
everyone shouted, until they realized it was not, in fact, the guest of honor. It was a teenager, with a ghost of familiarity in his unique brand of messy brown hair and bright blue eyes. Surely it struck Beau at once when he saw the teenager, like he'd fallen through a magic portal and before him stood his high school self, clueless, possibly dangerous, with an odd look in his eye. But whether or not it struck Beau at all, he sighed and said,
"Really? Are you the missing server? You're late as hell."
The teenager blinked.
"Huh? You're not even in your uniform. What the fuck?"
Beau winced. He was turning into a groomzilla, and now cuss words were being thrown at wide-eyed teenagers.
"Sorry. Come in and get to the kitchen. False alarm!"
he called out over his shoulder as he pulled the teenager inside and slapped the door shut.
"Actually, you know what? Just stand here in the crowd until he arrives, and you can get into your uniform afterwards. He's gonna be here any second."
The teenager was lost beyond words.
Who? "You're hopeless. Go! Go! Go!"
Beau guided him toward the crowd.
"Everyone, quiet down. The next time won't be a false alarm. Look, kid, just shout, 'Surprise,' when everyone else does, all right? I'll go over everything later."
Everything had to go perfectly. He wasn't about to let some lazy server ruin it all.
I'm looking for Beau Whitman. Are you?" "Yes, yes, I'm Beau. You're at the right place. Quiet."
"Oh, I just wanted to talk and..."
"Quiet, quiet! He's coming! Everyone, back in places!"
A hush fell over the room. Beau and the teen stood at the front of the crowd, ready for the front door to open. Beau could feel needles of excitement and sheer terror on his fingertips. He was ready for anything at that moment. Anything except this.
"I think you're my dad."
Beau turned to the teenager. Every thought fled his frantic head right then. The surprise party, the guests, the catering, his own name, the feel of his feet on the floor, and left him with only one singular focus. That teenager. He was weightless. He was nothing. What did that kid just say? The world exploded into a chorus of, "Surprise!" all around him, and Beau didn't even flinch. He didn't notice the guest of honor having finally arrived. He didn't see the fruit of his labor of putting this party together. His eyes were locked only on the teens, those bright, sparkling blue eyes. Just like his own. That was the moment their stories became one. The day that kid came crashing into his life, 15 years late, at the worst possible time. But good timing was not either of their talents. Like father, like son, right? Because long, long before that teenager crashed into his life, Bo crashed into someone else's. On a stormy, fateful night, 30 years before, at the foot of a stranger's driveway. The storm of 1985. 5 years old. Raindrops shattered over little Bo's tensed face, painting wet brown tangles of messy hair down his forehead. His thighs cramped as he raced home on his squeaky, inadequate bike, taking the corners too quickly. His new neighborhood was a confusing web of twisted streets, cul-de-sacs, and broken pavement. But Bo knew his way. Each flash over his head made all the slick rooftops shine and every nearby window glare. Pouring rain hissed in his ears. Wind whistled between the houses and the cars piled up along the curb. The broken pavement of the sidewalk made Bo's travel uneven, and with every big bump, he risked flying off his bike and giving himself another scrape or bruise to match the 5 or 6 he already had from roughhousing, among other things. He didn't see the boy standing at the end of the driveway as he barreled forward, and when their startled eyes met through the curtains of rain between them, it was already too late. A few things should be mentioned about Bo Whitman before we see him crash into that poor kid and ruin his life. For one, he's a terrible singer. He's going to discover later in life that he loves to sing when he drinks. And he will love to drink, just like his old man. Bo was fiercely competitive, too. Annoyingly so. The boy was a total hothead through and through, ever since he could walk. It probably wouldn't be so bad a fact if he wasn't also such a sore loser. The late 80s mourns the tragic loss of 6 or so different Nintendo controllers that met their violent end when an angry Bo threw them across the room after losing another game against a friend. That's why he didn't keep many friends. Or controllers. But that's not why his story is being told. It has to do with the weirdo named Caleb Fletcher. Caleb was a short, awkward counterpoint to Bo's fire. Perpetually frozen in fear came to mind when one thought of Caleb. That's the poor kid Bo Whitman is about to crash his bike into, if you haven't guessed. Little Caleb, who stood on someone else's driveway, right in the path of the sidewalk, lost and trying to find his way home. The boy had come to a stop on that driveway after a long and confusing stroll up one street and down another, somehow unable to recognize his own house in the pouring rain and terrifying flashes of lightning. Caleb knew he should have followed his older sister, Jules, when she ran off without him at the playground. But he hadn't finished his drawing in the sand under the swing sets. Some mean neighborhood boys had stamped it out and kicked sand at little Caleb's face, so he had to start over. Then came the booms of thunder, startling Caleb. Rain began to pour down so suddenly, it was like a bucket had just been tipped over his short-cropped, buzzed head. His sister was gone. When he gazed back down at the sand, it wasn't the mean boys who had so efficiently wiped away his artwork, but Mother Nature herself. He shouted for Jules, but couldn't even hear himself through the rain. His heart raced as fear filled his chest. So he bolted. A few things ought to be mentioned about Caleb Fletcher. For one, he had an irrational fear of drowning. He also had an irrational fear of lightning striking him right where he stood, even if he was in the middle of his bedroom, thanks to an informative safety video he watched in preschool. Fear led his life in every form. Maybe that was exactly why he needed Beau to come crashing into him that fateful evening. A Tuesday in June of 1985, 10 till 7, with a blanket of thick storm clouds rolling overhead and growling like a pack of feral wildebeest. On that driveway, Caleb watched the boy on the bicycle as he came. He watched it like a film, until suddenly he became a part of said film. The boy soared right at him through the rain. A split second of indecision had Caleb leaping to the left. The bike veered the same way. The boys crashed together in an explosion of rain, metal, and grass. Caleb thought everything in him broke upon impact. He was certain of it. His arms, his legs, his thigh where the bike rammed into him. His face, too, maybe. Drowning should have been the least of his phobias. It was crazy-ass bicycles he ought to have feared all along, and the boys who rode them. Caleb cried out, but again, the storm greedily ate up all the noise that sprung from his little mouth. Splayed out on the grass, staring at a wheel still spinning from the turned-over bike, Caleb's teary eyes found the other boy, who had sat up on the grass to inspect his knee after landing. There was something about the boy's odd, unpretentious curiosity that calmed Caleb right away. It had not until this precise moment occurred to him that someone could be hurt, and not immediately cry about it. What if some boys don't cry? It was nearly instantly that Caleb felt no more pain. He sat up, in fact, and continued to watch the other boy, spellbound. Beau looked up from his knee to find the weird kid staring at him. "You're in my way, dummy!" he cried accusatorily. Caleb only caught half the words. "I'm lost," he squeaked. Beau frowned, then rose to his feet, his knee forgotten. "Don't you live here?"
"Yeah, but I..."
The boy's eyes moved to the spinning wheel of the upturned bicycle.
"I can't find my house."
With an impatient glance at his G.I. Joe watch, Beau knew he was running late. His father had demanded he be home by 7, and with every second spent on this lawn with this boy, the more he risked incurring his father's drunken wrath. A broken toy racetrack still crouched like a giant squashed bug in the corner of his bedroom, a ghostly reminder of the last time he stepped out of line with his dad. Did he really want to press his luck again?
"I have to get home,"
Beau spat back, decided. Caleb said something else, but Beau had already picked up his bike and thrown a leg over it, ready to take off. Home was just a street away, and the rain was clearly not letting up. But something nagged Beau about the boy still sitting on the grass. Was it his big, sad eyes? The way he clutched a hand to his chest? The clueless look on his annoying little face? It hit him right then. He was the boy from the playground, the one who drew pictures in the sand by himself. It was just a month ago Beau moved here, but the neighborhood boys adopted him instantly into their clique, regardless of whether Beau wanted to be part of it. He watched as his sudden new best friends kicked the sand, scuffing the boys' drawings out of existence, then returning to Beau, laughter in their eyes, proud of themselves, especially the one named JJ, who was a year older and crueler. Beau sighed and gave in, turning back to the boy.
"What did you say? I didn't hear you."
The boy shrunk.
"I said, I don't want to drown."
"Drown?" he scoffed. "It's just a stupid storm." Right then, a crash of lightning shattered the sky above them, and the boys looked up. Bo could taste the rain. The storm was getting worse, as if challenged by his very words. Bo turned back to him.
See? Just a stupid storm. I'm scared,
whimpered the boy. Time was running out. Bo decided to let his daddy's words spill right out of his mouth as if they were his own.
Well, that's your first mistake, being scared.
Can you give me a ride to my house?
How am I gonna do that? You don't know where you live.
I do too.
The boy scrambled to his feet, looked left, looked right, then folded his arms.
I think...
It was hopeless. For all Bo knew, the kid would find some way to drown if he was left here all on his own. It was clear he had been standing there on that driveway for however long waiting for someone to come save him. Helpless and weak. And alone. Bo knew the consequence of getting home late. Yet still, something drove him to say,
Get on then. Don't just sit there.
Caleb experienced a second of confusion before realizing what he was being invited to do. He rushed to the bike and, after an awkward maneuver, managed to climb onto the seat behind Bo. And with a push, the boys were off. Caleb's bony arms flung around Bo's waist immediately, as if afraid he might fall 100 feet to his doom. That small action, plus the added weight of this hopeless boy, threw Bo's balance way off. The two stopped after traveling mere feet. Bo tried again, but couldn't manage.
You're too heavy, he complained.
My name's Caleb,
the boy sweetly said back. He would never get home in time. Bo just knew it. Yet still, he didn't want to leave the boy stranded. He committed to helping Caleb, and it meant something to him. After a grunt, he tried once more, and finally succeeded in keeping them upright this time. But it was a struggle as they slowly, shakily made way, bike wobbling. The rain was relentless on their soaked backs.
What does your house look like?
Like that one.
Caleb replied, pointing at the house they just left.
Oh, and that one?
He pointed at another similar house.
Oh, and that one, too. And that one, and...
There was no way to tell how much time passed. 5 minutes? 10 minutes? The boys circled down two whole streets while the infuriatingly confused Caleb kept changing his mind, sending them one way, then another. And if that wasn't enough, the whole time Caleb kept rambling on about nothing to do at all with the task at hand. Bo learned all about Legos, which were Caleb's favorite thing in the world, especially castles. Someday, Caleb was going to live in a big castle, just like the ones he'd built, with a great big moat. He said it's important to have a moat, because it keeps the bad guys away. Bo wondered whether he was one of those bad guys. Which side of the moat would he be standing on if Caleb someday got his castle? Well, he can kiss any dream of a castle goodbye if it's made out of playground sand, that's for sure. Pregnable by a simple kick to its walls. Or if Caleb built a castle in enemy territory, like he did under the swing set that day at the playground, drawing in the sand. Maybe that's why Bo asked, Why didn't you fight back at the playground? Caleb didn't think long about it.
I didn't want to fight.
Sometimes you gotta.
No, you don't.
They were being mean to you.
Bo nearly lost his balance, but regained it just in time to keep them from falling over.
If you don't fight back, they'll keep kicking sand at you.
Maybe they can be my friends someday.
Bo couldn't believe his ears.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?